stations, Denver Open Media, and Tice Ivy Farr, Michael Fox, Ed Chastain, and Devin Arend. Special thanks also to Chuck Skurich, John Hamilton, Dennis Moynihan, Elizabeth Press, David Prude, Renee Feltz. I'll be doing a report back from the conventions Friday, July 29th at Provincetown Town Hall, and Saturday, July 30th at Martha's Vineyard Old Wailing Church. Go to democracynow.org for details. Follow our team for the latest updates from the Republican National Convention and Democratic Convention at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and now Snapchat. Democracy Now! Has joined Snapchat. And thanks to our team here, to Mike Burke, to all of the folks that made this broadcast possible. I'm Amy Goodman. As well, I want to thank Nermeen Sheikh, Dina Guzder, Carla Wills, Sam Alcock. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Portland. We just got done listening to Democracy Now! The time is 4:59 p.m., and coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
Hello, KBOO members. Thank you for being a part of our amazing community. It takes all of us to manage this great community resource, and role played by the Community Board of Directors is essential. Here's an opportunity for you to join the KBOO Board and become part of the team that is guiding our daily work and representing the interests and vision of all our members. Please consider applying to become a KBOO Board member if you want to help serve our community and put your gifts and talents to good use. There is a time commitment for about 15 hours a month for all board members, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kboo.fm/2016boardofdirectors or stop by the station to pick up a paper copy. The deadline to apply is July 24th. We are looking for folks who love KBOO, who are committed to our community and want to carry forward KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change. KBOO needs you. Apply today.
KBOO Radio and the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group bring you the 2016 Willamette River Festival, Sunday, July 31st at Cathedral Park from noon till 7. Celebrate, dance, and reconnect with the wonderful Willamettes. Musical guests include Logger's Daughter and Zydeco Bands, Cascade Crescendo, and the New Iberians. Also, DJ Anjali and the Incredible Kid. That is July 31st at Cathedral Park. More information at www.willamettriverfestival.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, white supremacist David Duke registered today for Louisiana's U.S. Senate race.
Fox News has fired its chairman, Roger Ailes. He was forced out this week after a growing list of women accused him of sexual harassment.
And Hillary Clinton is expected to announce her running mate today.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 22nd, 2016. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. Fox News Channel has fired its long-term chairman, Roger Ailes, who was forced out this week after a growing list of women accused him of sexual harassment. Former Fox and Friends anchor Gretchen Carlson's lawsuit alleges she was fired by Ailes after she refused to have sex with him. Ailes has denied the claims. He had run the network for 20 years, and his departure stunned many. Considered the architect of the conservative network Fox News, Ailes was one of the most powerful people in media today. Gretchen Carlson's attorney says 10 more alleged victims of Ailes have contacted her for legal representation. Ailes' firing has led to speculation that right-wing hosts Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly would also leave. Fox Executive Chairman Robert Murdoch says that he will take over personally to run Fox News and its sister Fox Business Network until the new chief is found.
The Republican National Convention wrapped up last night with a speech by Donald Trump, the party's nominee for President of the United States. FSRN's Jacob Bresnik spoke with Alice Olstein, a political reporter for Think Progress. She's been covering the convention in Cleveland.
Alice Olstein is a politics reporter for Think Progress. She's been covering the Republican National Convention from Cleveland. Alice, tell us, you saw the speech by Donald Trump. What were your takeaways from that address?
Well, it was a big hit with the crowd, although it did drag so long that he did begin to lose people. But besides sort of the superficialities, there was a lot in the speech that was not true. And my colleagues did a good job fact-checking some of that, and that is up on our website. His statistics about crime, specifically killings of police officers, were wildly inaccurate. The implication that immigration is at a higher, undocumented people crossing the border specifically, is at a much higher level than before is not true. Some of the issues around refugees and the vetting of refugees was very misleadingly represented. There's, in fact, a very rigorous process for vetting refugees who come to the United States. But you can read all of that up on our website. And I think that's perfectly in keeping with the kind of campaign he's run, in which he has doubled down on a lot of untrue statements and untrue sort of characterizations of where the country's at.
We've heard and read a lot about dissension within the Republican Party itself. I mean, notably when Senator Ted Cruz refused to endorse him from the podium. What were you seeing on the convention floor? Any evidence of that sort of thing?
Yes, I was right on the convention floor when that happened, and it was startling. What made it more startling was that throughout most of Ted Cruz's speech, the audience was, you know, listening to him in rapt silence and cheering and just very supportive of Senator Cruz. And then as the speech drew to a close without an endorsement for Donald Trump, they just turned on him very quickly. And people around me were screaming and booing. They were chanting, "Say his name," and "endorse Trump." People were leaping on their chairs and doing like an angry thumbs down. And I talked to delegates on the floor, and they said they were disappointed. They called Ted Cruz a traitor. They said it's important to unify the party. They hit him for coming to the convention and then presenting this sort of embarrassing moment for Trump, as opposed to just staying away, as so many high-profile Republicans have. We're missing major former presidents. We're missing lots of major members of Congress who just completely stayed away from the convention. Ted Cruz decided to come speak, but not endorse, and that angered a lot of people. However, I did find some delegates who were impressed with Ted Cruz and said it took guts to do what he did, and they saw it as a rejection of sort of Trumpism and demagoguery. Those were their words.
And so then looking forward, what did you see in Cleveland that you think might hand the Democratic Party some, I don't know, political fodder when they convene their convention next week in Philadelphia?
Well, there was a lot made of the lack of diversity among delegates, although I will say that, you know, it was not a completely lily-white set of people. I was down on the floor talking to a great deal, and there was some diversity both in age and in race and in sexual orientation. However, it will be nothing like the diversity we're going to see in Philadelphia. That will be certain. So I think that's going to be a big theme about who is welcome in the Democratic Party versus who is welcome in the Republican Party right now. I also think that there is going to be a big contrast to the sort of fire and brimstone, the world is falling apart, we should be afraid message that we heard on multiple nights here at the Republican convention. And there's going to be a portrayal of the Obama administration as solving a lot of problems. There's going to be a lot of talk of all of the people who have gained health care through the Affordable Care Act. There's going to be a lot of talk of drawing down wars overseas and making the country safer. So I think there's going to be an effort to spin a positive, optimistic message to contrast with what we saw here.
Alice Olstein is a politics reporter for Think Progress. She spoke from Cleveland. For FSRN, I'm Jacob Resnick.
White supremacist David Duke registered today for Louisiana's U.S. Senate race. Quote, "I believe my time has come," end quote, the former Ku Klux Klan leader said after submitting his paperwork for the ballot. Duke told reporters his decision was based in part on recent shooting deaths of three law enforcement officers by an African-American man. He declared his candidacy for the Senate the day after Donald Trump accepted the Republican nomination for president. Duke said today he supports Trump's current political platform because it so closely resembles his own.
Activists from the U.S. and Latin America rallied yesterday outside the Republican National Convention in Cleveland to denounce racism and nationalism in U.S. politics. FSRN's Ariel Goodman reports.
"We are here to demonstrate that there is an alternative. We reject the narrative of hate. We embrace a narrative of solidarity."
They call it the People's Caravan. It's a collection of grassroots community leaders that have arrived here in Cleveland to make themselves heard. They unfurl a banner that reads, "It takes roots to weather the storm," and pledge to resist racism, misogyny, and hate in communities. Nichelle Harris is part of MORE, Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment. She says their purpose is to bring a positive message of hope to counteract the fear that she says is being peddled inside of the convention center.
"As people representing frontline communities throughout the country have a different vision, and we want to bring that vision here. We want to bring that vision to the people who may be on the line, not sure whether or not they support Trump and his hate, or if they think there might be another way to fix the problems they see."
The caravan isn't singling out Republicans. As the RNC winds down in Cleveland, these 45 activists are getting back on the road to take their message next week to the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Ariel Goodman, FSRN, Cleveland.
The Indiana Court of Appeals today overturned the feticide conviction of Purvi Patel, a woman found guilty of killing her premature infant by taking abortion-inducing drugs last year. The court said Indiana law was not intended to be used to, quote, prosecute women for their own abortions, end quote. Patel had been convicted of neglect and feticide and sentenced to 15 years in prison. Women's advocacy groups worked to overturn the conviction, which was the first time a state feticide law was used against a woman because of an alleged self-induced abortion.
Just after 4 o'clock this morning, the Salem Police Department received a report of a toddler walking alone in the 4700 block of Skyline Road South. Officials in Salem still have no idea who the baby is. They're asking for any tips of information. The child is described as an approximately 2-year-old white female with short blonde hair and green eyes, wearing a t-shirt and pull-up diaper. She was unable to provide her name or that of her mother. She said she lived in an apartment. Officers drove the girl around the neighborhood trying to identify her residence, while other officers canvassed nearby apartment complexes. These efforts were unsuccessful in reuniting the child with a parent. As of this afternoon, the Salem Police Department has not been contacted by anyone reporting a missing child. Anyone with information regarding this girl is asked to telephone the Salem Police Department at 503-588-6123.
A Klamath County man charged with murder has filed a federal lawsuit arguing he killed a man because police failed to respond to a 911 call about the man's aggression. Let me restate that, failed to respond to a 911 call about the man's aggression. The lawsuit has been brought by Timothy Taylor, whose attorney says 77-year-old Fay Roy Knight threatened and harassed him before the shooting last May. Taylor seeks $30 million for pain, suffering, and mental anguish. Defendants include the county, the state, and the local jail, and the sheriff. Taylor, who is 40 years old, says he has the right to protect himself and believes his arrest in the shooting is unconstitutional. He's being held without bail.
Florida this week, a North Miami police officer shot a black man lying flat on his back on the ground with his hands in the air. FSRN's Nell Abram has more.
In Florida this week, a North Miami police officer shot a black man lying flat on his back on the ground with his hands in the air. Officers responded to a 911 call about a man with a gun threatening to kill himself. The man was an autistic patient at a nearby group home who had walked away from the facility carrying a toy truck. When police arrived, a staff member from the facility, 47-year-old African-American Charles Kinsey, was trying to calm his patient. Officers ordered the men to lie down.
Stop
Video of the incident shows that Kinsey complied with his hands in the air, explaining the situation as he did so. According to Kinsey, officers then shot him, handcuffed him, and left him lying on the pavement. The head of the Dade County Police Benevolent Association, John Rivera, told reporters that the officer was actually trying to protect Kinsey and shot the wrong man. The still unnamed officer is now on paid leave and a probe is underway. Mr. Kinsey is recovering. Meanwhile, in Baton Rouge, a memorial service was held Thursday night for the three police officers killed there last Sunday. A lone gunman, 29-year-old African-American Gavin Long, ambushed the officers before being shot himself. Louisiana State Police Colonel Mike Edmondson.
There is no doubt whatsoever that these officers were intentionally targeted and assassinated.
Three other officers were injured in the attack, and the death toll may yet rise.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin, followed by Rising Up with Sonali Kokhotkar at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio News and Views from a Hip-Hop Perspective. Tomorrow's weather is sunny and edging towards 80 degrees. Today in history, on July 22, 1916, 10 people were killed when a suitcase bomb went off during San Francisco's Preparedness Day Parade, an event sponsored by the local Chamber of Commerce in anticipation of America's entry into World War I. Two anti-war labor radicals, Thomas Mooney and Warren K. Billings, were accused of the bombing and imprisoned. They were released in 1939 amid doubts about their guilt. The quote of the day is from Adolf Hitler. Quote, all propaganda has to be popular and has to accommodate itself to the comprehension of the least intelligent of those whom it seeks to reach, end quote.
In Florida this week, a North Miami police officer shot The world is waiting for Hillary Clinton to divulge her pick for vice president. In a bid to steal Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump's thunder, Clinton was reportedly ready to reveal her choice this afternoon. But a bombing attack in Germany that killed 10 people is overshadowing the announcement. Donald Trump released his own vice presidential pick in the wake of the truck attacks in Nice, France, raising charges at the time that he was unaware of world politics. The Washington Post and other major media are speculating that Virginia Senator Tim Kaine is Clinton's most likely choice. Kaine has supported financial deregulation and weakened consumer rights. But this week he also vowed to help Clinton build an immigration reform program if she's elected. Kaine speaks fluent Spanish.
It's 5:18, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
What if a political party's platform actually stood for workaday people, rather than being a catalog of far-out right-wing nuttiness or a batch of nothingness meant to preserve business as usual? Lo and behold, this year's Democratic Party platform. It's not perfect, of course, but thanks to Bernie Sanders' revolutionary presidential campaign, this platform is actually rich in populist policies for the people. It puts Democrats on record for such overdue national needs as a nationwide jobs initiative to hire millions of Americans to rebuild and expand our crumbling infrastructure, a $15 national minimum wage, breaking up too-big-to-fail Wall Street banks, making public colleges tuition-free for working-class families, expanding Social Security, making it harder for CEOs to block workers from joining unions, reestablishing postal banks in our public post offices to give low-income families affordable access to banking, encouraging renewable energies to replace Big Oil's destructive fracking process, expanding community health centers to reach 25 million more uninsured families, requiring Medicare to negotiate with Big Pharma to lower our drug prices, and encouraging states to provide universal health care, decriminalizing marijuana, eliminating for-profit prisons and detention centers, and abolishing the death penalty. And what about eliminating super PACs, providing financing of elections and automatic voter registration, and making Election Day a national holiday? This is Jim Hightower saying, none of these things is a done deal, but at least one party is committing to an agenda that grassroots progressives can organize around. After all, change always comes from the bottom up. So, let's get moving.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Turkey's parliament granted President Recep Tayyip Erdogan sweeping powers yesterday after declaring a three-month state of emergency as he vows to rebuild the nation's military from the ground up. Still reeling from a failed coup attempt blamed on followers of a U.S.-based Islamic cleric, police, judges, and school teachers have been fired, arrested, and detained, with the ongoing purge now numbering more than 60,000 people. The government also announced it's suspending the European Convention on Human Rights, which this spring ruled that Turkey discriminates against Alevis, the country's largest religious minority. FSRN's Fariba Narwa reports.
By now, it's a well-known story. As a faction of military officers sent troops, tanks, and warplanes in an attempt to topple the government, the Turkish president went on live television to call on his supporters to mass in the streets. Thousands of religious conservative Sunni Muslims heeded the call of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, some of them killed as they faced down soldiers in the streets. The shooting is over for now, yet street demonstrations by government supporters continue in the districts across Istanbul and beyond. It's these scenes of triumphant religious crowds making secular Turks and religious and ethnic minorities nervous. 21-year-old Sinan is a member of the Alevi faith. He recalls the night of the attempted coup when Erdogan's nationalist supporters tried to march into the Gazi district of the city, a stronghold for Alevis and leftists. Political and religious tensions have long existed between Gazi's residents and the government. That's led to a standoff as Gazi's residents erected barricades to keep Erdogan's supporters out.
A group, 50 to 60 people, wanted to enter this area, but the people formed a barrier and didn't let them in. From that second, the people started doing shifts after 6 p.m. in case the group returned.
Alevis tend to be liberal. They're not well known outside of Turkey, but about a fifth of the population. Hard numbers are impossible to come by, as their faith, an offshoot of Shia Islam, has no legal standing in Turkey. Alevis don't pray in mosques, and they don't observe Ramadan. Women rarely cover their hair, unless they're in the prayer hall. Women like Nuray, a 42-year-old Alevi who lives in the Istanbul neighborhood of Küçük Armatlı. She says her distinct identity of being an Alevi makes her a target as the politics of polarization play out.
It will get worse for Alevis because people will become divided and create different groups. Erdogan says Alevis aren't Muslims because they don't pray and they don't fast. For this reason, he doesn't like us.
Turkey is frequently criticized for discriminating against Alevis. The European Court of Human Rights condemned Turkey in April for not recognizing the faith practiced by the country's largest religious minority. But Turkey now says it suspended the court's jurisdiction for people like Ibrahim, a retired 61-year-old Alevi who has lived through different regimes. This is nothing new.
On a local level, he's upset by urban development plans that would displace working-class Alevis from his district of Istanbul.
We just want to live with our rights at the place which we built and struggled for. We gave blood. People of our community died in this area, so we want to live in it.
As the Turkish government continues to round up whomever it considers disloyal or potential enemies of the state, more and more people are being brought under suspicion by the state intent on purging what it sees as potential threats. This comes as the Turkish president continues to speak openly of bringing back the death penalty to deal with so-called traitors. Feribe Nawa, FSRN, Istanbul.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org for Wednesday, July 20th, 2016. Israeli troops injured a farmer in Gaza. Meanwhile, Israeli radical settlers set a West Bank home on fire, nearly killing its residents. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. A Palestinian farmer was injured on Wednesday morning when Israeli soldiers opened live gunfire targeting Palestinian farmlands and farmers east of Deir al-Balah city in central Gaza. Local medics rushed to the site of the Israeli attack and moved the wounded man to Al-Aqsa Hospital in Deir al-Balah. The Israeli attack forced the farmers to leave their lands in fear of additional military escalation and violations. It comes as part of repeated violations and assaults targeting the Palestinians in the besieged and impoverished coastal region. Such attacks also include opening fire on Palestinian fishers and their boats in Gaza territorial waters. Elsewhere, a Palestinian couple was nearly burned alive in their beds in the town of Douma near Nablus after a flaming explosive was thrown into the second-story window of their home while they were sleeping on Wednesday at dawn. The attack came just a few days before the one-year anniversary of the horrific arson attack on the Dawabsha family in Douma, in which an 18-month infant and his parents were burned to death, and a four-year-old child was the only survivor with severe burns all over his body. Israeli police say they are investigating the attack, which is the third such incident since the Dawabsha family was killed last year. Also on Wednesday at dawn, the Palestinian Prisoner Society, PPS, has reported that Israeli soldiers kidnapped at least 16 Palestinians, including former political prisoners, in different parts of the occupied West Bank, including occupied East Jerusalem. Moreover, Israeli soldiers on Wednesday uprooted olive trees in the village of Deir Istia in Salfit Governorate under the pretext of opening road designated for the sole use of people residing in illegal West Bank settlements. And that's all for today from the IMEOC News. This was the Wednesday, July 20th, 2016 news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Maui and me, Hassan Banoura.
And now, the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
Workers Independent News Week in Review. I'm Doug Cunningham. At the union's conference in Las Vegas, AFSCME President Lee Saunders said his union is proud to support Hillary Clinton for president because he believes her policies are much better for working people than what the Republicans are offering.
She is fighting to protect our jobs. She is fighting for equal pay. She is fighting for secure retirement for all. And we are proud, sisters and brothers, we are proud to stand with her.
Hillary Clinton told the AFSCME conference in Las Vegas that she will stand with workers and their unions as president.
So I promise you this, I will be by your side in this fight every step of the way. When I am president, working people will always have a seat at the table and a champion in the White House. Because I believe that when unions are strong, America is strong.
On the first day of the Republican National Convention, groups of protesters gathered in a police-designated protest zone to air opposition to Trump and support for a range of issues, including a $15 minimum wage and naturalization of undocumented immigrants. WIN's Laura Brickman reports.
While the crowd numbered in the hundreds, there were fewer protesters than predicted by law enforcement as well as by organizers of the event. Mick Kelly from the Coalition to Stop Trump said heavy police restrictions and changing regulations accounted for the lower than expected turnout.
We're hoping for 1,000 plus. We only got this place. The city only seated us this place 4 days ago, 5 days ago. So people don't know where and when to be. They hate Trump, but they don't know where and when to be.
A few yards from the protest, a group of Texas delegates stood wearing matching American flag shirts and cowboy hats and watched the demonstration. I asked how they felt about the protesters.
Well, we had to be told there was one, so it couldn't be too much of a protest. Hey, it's America. If you want to demonstrate, give your point of view, that's America. As long as you do it peacefully and don't obstruct others from their rights, everything's cool.
Despite his RNC stage remarks in Cleveland, Donald Trump thinks Hillary Clinton is a terrific woman, works really hard, and would make a good president. Unless he was lying when he said it. Don't take my word for it. Listen to the Donald himself praise Hillary.
Hillary Clinton, I think, is a terrific woman. Well, first of all, I know her very well, and I know her husband very well, and I like them both. They are, just really terrific people. She really works hard, and I think she does a good job.
I know her, and she'd make a good president or a good vice president.
Workers Independent News provided by Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
This coming fall, Edward Snowden will be live-streamed in theaters around the United States in tandem with the release of a new documentary about his life. Oliver Stone's documentary, Snowden, covers his activities as an NSA whistleblower,